Ignition sequence start.
The reason I'm prepared for this position is because I've been preparing for this all my life.
As far as James, he's our guy.
We still got James Harden. Our goal is still to win a championship.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
Being in a win now situation, that's great. I'm a win now coach.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2.
What is up and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every single day. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder slash managing editor of ClutchCityControlRoom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show, of course, on Twitter at Locked On Rockets, as well as the blog at ClutchCityCR. Now, joining us today to discuss the madness that is being a Houston Rockets sports fan and following this team for as many years as he has is Forbes sports contributor Rahat Huck, better known as Red 94 and the many variations of Red 94 on Twitter. How are you doing today, Rahat?
I'm doing great. It's great to be here. It's currently Wood 94. It is great to finally be here, and I just need to apologize to you that it has taken this long on my end because we have been trying to put this together, but you came into my mentions. I clearly was seeking, I was reaching out for some sort of help. I was
a
crying.
Cry for help, absolutely.
It was a cry for help. You recognized it, and you caught me at my most vulnerable moment. And so that is why I am here right now. And as I said, I hope you accept my insurance. Let's do it.
Blue Cross Blue Shield is totally fine. So we'll just make sure that that's fine. We'll treat this as a healing process, right? Is we're gonna work through these emotions. We're gonna talk about what's going on with the team right now. And I think obviously the thing that is at the forefront of everybody's mind is what the hell is going on with James Edward Harden. He, you know, does he want to be here? Does he not want to be here? Is he buying in? Does he respect Stephen Silas? Does he care about the Rockets organization? What are the reasons for him wanting to leave? And if you haven't read it yet, I mentioned it in our recent podcast with Matt Bullard that I'd be discussing this very piece, Tim McMahon's kind of hit piece on James Harden. And kind of, Rahat, this I guess kind of the TLDR, the summary of this article is that it can be summarized by the intro bit of the article from Tim McMahon is just that largely throughout his tenure here in Houston, James Harden has gotten everything that he's wanted. He's been told yes all the time when he's given ultimatums. The organization has ultimately caved to him. And that is now, we're now seeing the repercussions in that. And thankfully, at least right now, with Rafael Stone in charge, they're finally saying no to James Harden. So go ahead and give me your introductory thoughts on what's going on there.
I don't know that I even really have introductory thoughts. Like I'm still working my way through my emotions on all of this. And quite frankly, to be perfectly honest to you, they're evolving by the hour as I think different aspects of it through.
Based on your stream of consciousness on Twitter, I would say they're evolving by the minute, but maybe that's a stretch. But no, I hear you.
I think I'm content right now. Well, let me step back and look. Do you agree with me that piece makes it clear now that it's over? You know what I mean? Like yesterday during the game, and you saw my tweets and my thoughts, and before the game, I've been, you know, holding on to this hope, and I've been clinging to this desperation that, you know, perhaps we can get the second seed and John Wall and James Harden, everybody, you know, the whole gang's going to come together, and, you know, James is going to, he's going to change his mind, and, you know, the media is out to get us. But after reading that piece and, you know, hearing him speak today, I've kind of accepted that it's not just that it's over, but I actually think it's been over for a year. Like, I think that ultimatum about get Westbrook here or I'm out, I think that's when it was actually over. That's when you lost total control of him. And so it's been over. We're just going through the stages right now. Like, I don't as of right now, and I reserve the right to change my mind maybe 5 minutes after we finish recording, because I likely will. But as of right now, I think this thing is completely over. Like, that's my impression right now. Like, he's done. He's out. This is just a function of, let's wait until we can get a deal to get you out of here. But I feel like this thing is not salvageable right now.
So the hope that I am still clinging to, and traditionally, and I think that I've been, I probably skew a little bit more optimistic than I do pessimistic, but I try to stay towards some line of realism, especially on this podcast. You know, I may skew a little bit more optimistic in my tweets from time to time, but on this podcast specifically, I try to stay, try to toe the line in the middle. And where I'm sitting at right now is, James Harden understands that for him to be a trade asset that another contending team would want to pursue, would want to give up the farm for, he needs to produce at an elite level. And if he is producing at an elite level in Silas's system alongside these pieces, it doesn't matter what his reasoning is for that production. It doesn't matter if he's producing because he actually buys into Silas's system and he wants to be here in Houston and he wants to retire a Rocket and the relationships are salvaged. None of that matters. Yes, that would be great. That would be sunshine and lollipops. But none of that matters, because if he's producing at an elite level and it's conducive to winning basketball, then the Rockets are going to look great. They're going to look just like if Harden was bought in, because he's producing at the level that he needs to produce at for this team to secure the wins that they want to secure to be a potential contender this season. Now, if he's producing at that level because he wants to be traded and he's just putting on a show for his new team, so be it. That's fine. Maybe they win a championship with James Harden this year and he still wants to leave in the summer. Like, that is still very much an option on the table at this point for me. However unrealistic, that option is still on the table because James Harden is still in a Houston Rockets jersey. And that's where I sit right now, and that's where I'm going to sit until he's dealt.
What is the opportunity cost? Okay, look, let's hit pause there. Let me go back. I want to push back on one thing.
Sure.
And then I'll circle back to the point I was about to make. And that is that you asserted the premise that for a team to deal for him, he needs to produce. I'm going to push back on that. I don't know that that's the case. I think the body of work is so strong, and there's just such a duration there. I mean, we're talking about 8 years of elite play. So I don't know that that needs to happen. Like, I think he could, quite frankly, I think he could sit out for the next month and the same suitors that were in existence would still be there. Now, he'd get fined potentially and he'd lose out on salary, but I don't think that his value is dependent on his production, because that's not really important. Now, he could show up to be 300 pounds, and depending on which camera angle you saw last night,
Rick Ross Harden. No, but I guess the language, and specifically the reason I'm kind of leaning that direction and feel that way, and I'm going to probably hold that firm stance for a while unless presented, overwhelming evidence to the contrary, is based on the language used in the recent Adrian Wojnarowski report, where, Harden, using the language talking about Harden understands that if he appears to be a quote unquote distressed asset, then teams may be apprehensive about pursuing him. And so there's an understanding, at least on Harden's end, that he needs to, appear to still be the player that he can be so that other teams will be willing to put together an appropriate package, a package that the Rockets deem suitable to actually be able to trade him. So it's Harden's understanding that if he wants out, he has to play ball with Rafael Stone and with the Rockets and actually do what they want him to do on the court to produce. And yes, the trade may not be consummated 2 weeks from now. It may not be at the deadline. I'm leaning towards the fact that it's probably going to be next summer. And if that's the case, great. You've got James Harden in his prime for one more season before you move on from him.
Okay, so that's where I want to go. And I was actually going to tweet about this before we got on, so I'm glad I didn't. Okay, what is the opportunity cost of waiting until the summer? Okay, so like the offer, the package that I think most people are pointing to that they want is Ben Simmons, with another throw in and then three first round picks. I don't think that's there. Like, I don't think that's going to be there, but let's assume that it is, right? Let's assume that if you traded him to Daryl Morey today, you would get Simmons and you'd get three picks and then another throw in of your choice. To the extent that that's there right now, what is the offer next summer? So you, now you're going from 2 full years of club control down to just 1 year of club control. I don't think his age matters in this, you know, scenario. I think you'd agree with that. Him, James Harden at 32, you know, he's still gonna be a top four player.
Absolutely.
So if you're talking about Simmons and three picks right now, I think it's probably Simmons straight up next summer. And here's what worries me. I think people are being overly optimistic about thinking that Daryl is going to offer all of that even right now, like even if he could get him now or at the deadline, because looking at the market, what even so far is even out there that is attractive? Now I'm saying that with the placeholder that I acknowledge that hopefully some better options will surface as we get closer to the deadline, but Tyler Hero, are you kidding me? Is he even a top 100 player?
You're not on the Hero hype train.
That's what scares the hell out of me. Like, we're operating under this assumption that, you know, and I'm guilty of that too. Like, I've made a lot of tweets about, like, you know, he took a full page out about James Harden. Of course he wants to, but like, my fear is that we're completely overvaluing this whole thing, and that it ends up being something like Harden for Simmons straight up. And quite frankly, like when I hear the names Caris LeVert and Tyler Hero, it makes me think, damn, I would be grateful for Harden for Simmons straight up.
So I want to circle back to this, and I have a counter to your counter. And so and I want to get there in just a second after we get in a quick message from our friends over at Built Bar. Let's talk protein bars for a second. Look, you either love them or you hate them. And it's time for you to start loving protein bars with Built Bar. They've got 18 delicious flavors. They've got the 12 OG flavors. You know mine. It's the double chocolate mousse. Can't go wrong with it. They've also got banana bread, peanut butter. They've got some of the newer flavors, caramel brownie, cookies and cream. Just you name it, they probably have it as a flavor. These bars, they're soft. They're easy to chew. And here's the thing, right, is they're covered in 100% delicious chocolate. It's not like eating a protein bar. It's just not. It's basically like eating a candy bar that is jam-packed with awesome protein, protein that you need, whether you're hitting the gym, trying to, you know, stay in shape, whatever it may be, Built Bar is right for you. So if you're trying to lose weight or just maintain weight, look, they're low-cal, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, amazing for a keto diet. And you can check it out. Just visit BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED On, and you'll get 20% off your very next order. So again, that's promo code Locked On for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. And continuing on here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, chatting with Mr. Red 94 himself, Rahat Huck. So Rahat, you were, you know, talking about the opportunity cost of not moving in on a, you know, hypothetical Harden deal right now versus waiting until, you know, next summer. And I would push back a little bit and say, while yes, maybe there's a little bit of worry that because you would be down to only 1 year of club control on James Harden's contract, that, you know, any potential offer would be shrinking. So, you know, a Simmons offer right now that is hypothetically Simmons, three picks, and another throw in would maybe just be Ben Simmons further down the line. I would actually say that while maybe the Sixers offer specifically shrinks a little bit, I think what we're going to see is because the superstar market is now drying up, first with the first domino to fall of Giannis Antetokounmpo signing his extension in Milwaukee. Kawhi Leonard is still in play as a potential free agent this upcoming offseason. But if Kawhi were to sign his extension, or re-up on, you know, to commit to the Clippers for long term, or specifically, even if he doesn't stay with the Clippers, if he moves somewhere else and, you know, teams strike out in free agency, they're going to be looking to bolster their roster somehow. And I think that one of the things that it hasn't been paid enough attention to is how Rafael Stone is putting on a masterclass in kind of driving up the market on James Harden, at least from what we hear about the teams that he's interested in being traded to, the potential contenders out east. He's basically creating a bidding war around James Harden, and there is zero pressure for Rafael Stone to jump at the first or even second or even third offers that come into his office because he's got all the time in the world on his side. And I don't necessarily think that by not jumping on an offer right now, unless it's an offer that absolutely impresses, just blows you out of the water, you know, an offer that high quality. Because right now, I think we're both in agreement that the three picks and Simmons is probably not on the table. Simmons probably isn't even on the table right now is the thing.
Yeah, and I agree. I don't think Daryl offers Simmons until he knows that he has to. Like, I think that's the card up his sleeve, that when he needs to get there, when he knows that he needs to get this thing done, he's going to just stop messing around with it, and he's going to go ahead and offer the full package, whatever it is, Simmons. But right now, he knows that he doesn't need to do that.
I'll also raise you this. The opportunity cost on Daryl Morey's end for not putting Simmons up in a package deal. Because when you're looking at this from Daryl Morey's vantage point, he knows that by trading Simmons and a throw-in and future draft capital, that immediately launches the 76ers, Harden, Embiid, and their supporting cast into the top-tier elite of the Eastern Conference. Because right now, I would say that the Sixers are probably, as presently constructed, fifth or sixth seed, give or take, in the East. They haven't impressed me that much with their offseason acquisitions. I think the top four are clearly going to be Brooklyn, Boston, Miami Heat, and who am I forgetting here? Some combo of Raptors or potentially the Pacers, depending on how they look in the regular season, because they're just consistently a good regular season team. So I think you're going to look at Daryl Morey, who is probably, you know, if things don't look great for the 76ers by the trade deadline, that's when Daryl Morey maybe panics a little bit, because he realizes that if he waits until next summer, he misses out on a postseason of James Harden in his prime. He misses out on a shot at a title, a shot at coming out of the Eastern Conference by postponing trading Ben Simmons, a fit that he already knows on paper does not look super great between Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. So yes, they've got shooters around them now. Yes, it's a different coaching staff with Doc Rivers, but I still don't see that fit working this season.
You know, another thing is that I think fans and media as well, like, I think we get fixated on these long windows, like, oh, well, Ben Simmons is 24, so why would you trade him for a 31-year-old James Harden and therefore drastically reduce your window by several years? I don't think Daryl, particularly Daryl, when he knows how, you know, quickly he can retool, but I don't think he or other shrewd executives look at it like that. Like, I've written at length about this. It's been a few years since I've touched on this, but you know, for Daryl, knowing just how great James Harden is, he's looking at it like, I already came so close in 2018. My legacy is on the line. I have maybe two solid chances with James Harden to punch this thing through and secure my legacy. And after that, it doesn't matter. Like, you could be horrible for the next 5 years, but you won a title. Like, you coast after that. So, like, you're not looking at it like, oh, I have Ben Simmons in the seven-year window. You look at a two-year window with an all-time great, maybe the greatest scorer in NBA history, two chances to punch this thing in. And I think he's going to push the chips. And right now, he doesn't need to. Like I said, he doesn't need to offer Simmons yet. He's not going to drive up the price himself. But when he gets to that point, he's going to do it because, again, two solid chances to secure his legacy. Like, you may never get that chance again. You, like, to get a player as good as James Harden, the Rockets aren't going to have a player this good for another 20, 30 years. Daryl has the opportunity to close this thing out. I don't think he's going to walk away from that.
I don't either. First off, Rahat, I think you and I are vibing on like 100 right now, because I just tweeted out that exact same sentiment like a week ago, basically saying that, you know, in Daryl Morey's eyes, he, you know, looking at things from his point of view, he's weighing the known quantity versus the unknown, right? That's the argument between James Harden and Ben Simmons. Is you hope with Ben Simmons that his ceiling reaches a point where he could be, you know, a top 10 player in the league.
And let me jump in here. Sure. He will never be as good as James Harden. Like, you hope that maybe he's a solid top 10, but he'll never be a top 3 player. And as a Rockets fan, I'm okay with that. But from Daryl Morey's perspective, like, it's not even a question. Go on.
Absolutely. No. And I totally hear you on that. I appreciate the clarification. But you are, again, you're essentially banking on, can Simmons become good enough? And again, alongside Joel Embiid, because of the youth factor there, can they age and become good enough together to get you to that point where you could be a peak contender with those two as your two best guys and a good, you know, supporting cast around them versus the known quantity of James Harden, a top 3 player in the league who has 2 years guaranteed left in his prime right now, a superstar who is known for his durability, a superstar who has shown time and time again that he is a walking 50-win team in the Western Conference, in the Western Conference. So you put him in the East, he's going to cruise control through the crab fest that is the Eastern Conference and get to the playoffs and, you know, having used 70% of the energy he would have, you know, slogging through the mess that is the Western Conference to try and fight just for a top 4 seed. You know, they could cruise control to the second seed right behind the Brooklyn Nets or something with Harden and Joel Embiid.
And not to mention, Daryl's got to be salivating after seeing what the Lakers did to us even last year with LeBron and AD. Like, the ability to pair Harden and Embiid, like, that has to be just as dominant as that pairing, and you see what you can literally just piece cobble anything around that. Veterans, I mean, you could sign basically anybody you want at the vet minimum after that. Daryl has to be looking at the sheer dominance of LeBron and AD, and knowing that if he can get Harden over there with Embiid, he has something similar. And I mean, I'm arguing against myself here, because now the rebuttal to my premise earlier about Daryl being able to wait is that, well, if you only have two shots at this, you want to get James into your program as soon as possible so you can get as many reps as you can, and, you know, get build up chemistry between he and Embiid, and also you want to be viable on the waiver wire market later on in the year. So that might be an argument for Daryl just to, you know, just fold and push all his chips in and get this thing done.
And, you know, I do think this again comes back to Rafael Stone and why I firmly believe that he is still, even though the media would have you feel differently about this, Rafael Stone is absolutely in a position of leverage right now. 2 years left on James Harden's deal. He doesn't have, you know, a no trade clause. He doesn't have anything other than, you know, if he wanted to sit out and pout and be fined by the league, then sure. But all that does is reinforce the idea that if he doesn't get sent to a team that he wants to be at, then you're not getting a good superstar, which then feeds into the loop of, you know, teams aren't going to want to trade for him, all this mess. So I think Rafael Stone is in a primo position right now where he does not have to cave to an offer that he doesn't believe meets his standards. And if Daryl Morey wants to actually have a crack at this twice with James Harden, as we've discussed, then I think Morey is the one who's operating from a less advantageous position in regards to all this. And, you know, it does seem like they're going to at least try to roll things out and see how things work between Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. I still think that by the trade deadline, they're going to realize that it's not working and that they do need to make some kind of a shakeup. And that's when I'm expecting there to be the reports and rumors that Daryl has pushed all of his chips in and is offering, you know, the farm, Ben Simmons and all the other goodies for James Harden around the deadline. And we're gonna talk about Harden's media day comments and all that good stuff coming up here in just a moment, because we do have that to talk about. So we'll get there in just one moment. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As we are chatting with Rahat Huck, Red 94 himself from Twitter, the infamous Red 94 from Twitter, as some would have it. We love Rahat here. So, you know, let's go ahead and, you know, we've kind of discussed the Harden situation at length as far as what a conceivable trade package would look like, the timing around it, and, you know, just all of those different angles and avenues. I think we've kind of explored a lot of them. There's many more, but I think we've explored the main one quite a bit, which is, of course, the whole Ben Simmons deal. Now, what we do need to talk about is his comments. He finally spoke to the media, and I honestly thought he was going to keep putting it off for a little while. Maybe they threatened to fine him, and he didn't want to get fined, so he finally caved. And The Athletic did a really good job of cobbling together all his commentary, as well as kind of, you know, piecing together, you know, their ability to infer what he truly meant from some of his comments. But the one that stands out above all else is when Tim McMahon asked James Harden what he was doing in Atlanta and Vegas during training camp. And Harden's response was just, he could have gone one of two ways with this, and he went the way that he shouldn't have. And he says that he was training. And McMahon follows up by saying, for what? And Harden says, the start of the NBA season. Why in Atlanta and Vegas instead of Houston? And he says, my personal trainers were there. I mean, you just can't make this stuff up, right? It's just, it's like something out of a sitcom almost. Harden has definitely not earned any points with me or the rest of the fan base throughout a lot of this preseason drama and offseason drama. And honestly, Rahat, he could have come out and owned up to the situation, and instead he deflected in quite possibly the worst way he could have.
Yeah, and you know, I've made a few comments here and there about how he's, you know, just completely stomped on any goodwill that he had remaining on, you know, really the one fan base that's completely had his back over the years, when he is really the most despised player in the league, I would argue. I mean, I don't even think that's debatable. And maybe despised isn't the right word, but he's not a liked superstar. And I always get this.
People online literally call him Hitler.
Nobody likes
on r/NBA. Like, he is literally Hitler on that subreddit, which is awful. But
he is the most unlikable superstar in the league. And you know, I always get this pushback that, you know, there's always a snide remark that, you know, I'm pretty sure that he doesn't care about what NBA Twitter thinks. Well, I'm not saying that he does, or that, you know, that he should, but I'm making the comment that these are his fans. Like, the people listening to this podcast right now, these are the people who do support him. So it's really just a really crappy way to go out. You know, but you know, that's neither here nor there. I was surprised that he talked. I wonder, rather than fining, I wonder how much of it was tied to the timing of that hit piece coming out, that, you know, someone got to him and said, hey, you gotta make an appearance. I don't know. He's handled this in a really odd way. Like I said yesterday, I thought there were a lot of ways he could have come and presented this whole thing through back channels, where he could have come out looking much better. He could have come out with a lot of sympathy. Like, I think if his handlers knew to leak that he's upset about Tillman not paying luxury tax during his prime years, I think everybody would have completely sympathized and empathized with that. Like, I don't think anybody would have blamed him for wanting out, quite frankly. Like, obviously you would have had casual fans that didn't really understand the nuances of that. But if he blamed it on that, I think almost all of his loyalists would have backed him on that. But he hasn't given any reason, and the reasons that his handlers have given are sort of all over the place. And then we get this hit piece that comes out that, you know, expresses that essentially he's had the organization, he's had them at gunpoint for his entire tenure here, which isn't surprising. But really, the part that was surprising was the ultimatum last summer. Like, that was really
I'm so sorry. You said had the organization at gunpoint, and I just immediately went to the like, it just, it, I couldn't not picture it. Only now it's Harden holding the emoji gun at a rocket, which is just awful. So
I think it's, you know, it's not newsworthy. It's not, you're a journalism major, right?
Yes, sir.
It is not notable for a team to give a superstar different treatment. That's, you know, that is, that what is it? Is it man bites dog, dog bites man? I remember there's a paradigm there that I learned. I took one year of journalism before I ended up switching my major, but it's not notable. It's not notable that they treated him differently for partying. But the part of it that was notable was the Westbrook piece of it. That the fact that he actually threatened to request a trade if they didn't give Westbrook, like that's not to be brushed under the rug. And that, I mean, to me, that was when I really woke up to the situation. Like, I think I was clinging to false hope before that, but that's when I realized that this has been over. Like, quite frankly, if I was Daryl, that's when I would have resigned at that point. And I talked about this a little bit earlier today as well, that if you're Daryl, maybe the better move at that point, the rational move, would have been just to trade Harden to the Clippers for that same package that they got for PG, that OKC got for PG. And some of you guys listening pointed out that, you know, it's tough to see Daryl trading Harden. I get that. And I, you know, that's why I'm not criticizing Daryl, because I think from an emotional standpoint, I mean, again, the guy said James Harden changed his life. He said he took out an ad in the newspaper and said that. So I'm not blaming Daryl for that. But the fact that it came to that really speaks volumes.
And it's, again, and this circles back, and this is where we're going to, again, we're working through our emotions here. It pains to think about what should have been or what could have been between James Harden and Chris Paul, and that how that pairing, you know, came so close and was right there, right on the cusp of eternal glory, and came up again. Just, it's such a phrase that will be forever etched in every Houston sports fan mind, is a hamstring short. And then the subsequent year, Chris Paul just doesn't look himself. You know, everybody's calling him washed, and just, I understand how things probably looked from James Harden's point of view, having to shoulder the entire team at the 11-14 start, the unguardable tour, you know, digging them out of that hole to get them back in playoff contention, and then to have Chris Paul be abysmal for the entire playoff run until game 6 against the Warriors, which by then it was just, you know, too late. Steph Curry goes supernova in the second half of game 6, and that's all she wrote. You know, it just, I can see how that would have been grating on James Harden. And then suddenly you put yourself in his shoes. A good friend of yours becomes available because of the PG situation. You are sick and tired of Chris Paul, a guy who you don't think has enough left in the tank to be your co-pilot anymore. Russell Westbrook, who just put in another really solid season, albeit, you know, is anti-analytics in every sense of the term. You know, but in James Harden's eyes, he probably didn't see it that way. He just saw another hooper, a guy who could go out and be his running mate, be his consistent number two, and maybe be enough to get him over the hump here in Houston. And so even though it was an ultimatum of get me Russ or trade me, I think that it was less, like, I think it was because he was just that done with Chris Paul, that he felt that, you know, it was basically his Hail Mary play. And after it didn't work out, how they fizzled out so poorly this last season, I think that was the final point, the you know, the straw that broke the camel's back for Harden, where he was just like, you know what, I can't do it here. I can't do it anymore.
I mean, he's literally just ready to wash his hands of in a situation that he created.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't get to a point where I can forgive him for that. Like. It, you know, it doesn't have to be binary that he's, you know, he's a saint or, you know, he's the devil. Like, I can, and I think a lot of people struggle with this. You know, I can really reflect fondly on these 8 years and wish it could continue, but I can still hold him accountable and blame him for what's happened here, and blame him for really the disastrous situation that we find ourselves in, given that we OKC owns that 2021 pick. But on Chris Paul, you know, it was still +9, I think, for bench units in 2019. Like, I blame Mike for a bit of that in the postseason. Like, you should have been like, if you're the offensive genius that I know you are, like I criticize Mike a lot, but I'm not going to act like he's not a genius. Like, he's not Kevin McHale, you know, like I'll call a spade that Kevin McHale, you know, he's not a basketball coach. Mike had flaws, but he's brilliant. He's forgotten more basketball. He forgets more basketball in one day than both of us have ever known combined. But you should have had the ability to, after game one, when you saw that Chris Paul physically was not able to beat his man off the dribble, you should have had other things in place that you could implement where you could put him in motion off picks and running pick and rolls. And he's not like that. That's the thing. Like, and I tweeted about this a lot in 2019 because people were saying that he was washed just based off of clips of him not being able to get by his man one-on-one, but he didn't suddenly forget how to play basketball. Like,
he didn't suddenly forget how to shoot, he didn't suddenly forget how to pass. Like, there were other ways for Chris Paul to impact the game rather than just playing ISO.
Right. That's the thing. He's not Russell Westbrook, where if you impair some bit of physicality that he's just completely useless. And like that played itself out in the numbers. I don't remember exactly what the net rating was in the second half when he came back, but like it was really positive. Like, and I vividly remember myself tweeting this out to make that point. And so Mike should have been able to do that. Like, I quipped a couple weeks ago that I think Mike's downfall is that he has an early bedtime. It's 10 p.m. so he can't stay up late to watch film in the postseason, because an NBA coach should have been able to see the plan and should have been able to see the film and see that Chris Paul can't beat his guy off the dribble and switch and do something else. So I blame Mike for that, because Chris Paul was not washed the way that people say. He didn't forget how to pass. He didn't suddenly not become, you know, the most brilliant floor general we've seen since Magic Johnson. So let me set that point there. Secondly, on Westbrook, I agree with you. That's absolutely what James Harden, that's absolutely how he viewed it. He viewed it as, this is just another hooper. Like, this is my friend. And he's going to be able to get it done. But I can't let him off the hook that easily, because James Harden is a genius when it comes to basketball. Like, if all of the rest of us could see that it wouldn't work, he should have been able to recognize that it wouldn't work between himself and Russell. Like, I physically felt ill when the trade happened, and a lot of that was because of the picks, but everybody knew that wasn't going to work. I talked myself into it because the way that I do with everything, because I'm a fanatic, I'm such a rabid Rockets fan, I'm going to talk myself into anything. But James Harden, who is an absolute genius of all people, should have been able to recognize that it would not work with him and Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, there's a really excellent clip that a coworker of mine, thank goodness for her, caught on her Snapchat of me reacting to the Rockets trade. It was a really busy day at work, and she comes up to me. She's like, "Hey, there, you know, your friend," because I had a security guard who patrolled the complex, and he was a good friend of mine, and we would talk hoops. And he was like, "Your friend was looking for you, and he said there was some big news with the Rockets or something." And I was like, "What do you mean?" And I pulled my phone out, I checked Twitter, and she got on video me having a meltdown in the office at work, like just hand over my face, and I let out like the most excruciating like noise, and it's great. I'll throw it up on Twitter. It's just such a great video to see. But you know, and like you, I talked myself into it. I worked my way into it. And I thought, no, Russ is, you know, he's healthier than Chris Paul. He'll be able to put up the numbers. He'll be the quote unquote second engine, just like James Harden is the engine of the offense. Russ will be the engine that Chris Paul could never be. I was ignoring the advanced numbers. I was ignoring the on-off numbers. And we talked ourselves into it, and it did not work out well. And now we are seeing the repercussions of that trade, of the fallout from all of that. And it's painful. It's a tough spot to be in. But again, where I'm holding out that little semblance of hope is, it doesn't matter what reasons James Harden is producing on the court, as long as he's producing. Now, if it gets to a point where James Harden is sulking, doing his best Vince Carter impersonation, and he's out there just mailing it in, he's not trying defensively, he's not communicating, he becomes a hindrance to winning games, then yeah, you bench him, you cut his minutes, you fine him, you suspend him, you do whatever you need to do, and you maybe expedite looking for a way to get him out of town if that's the route that he decides to go. But at the present moment, it seems that James is committed to being professional and riding this thing out until it resolves itself one way or another. And again, well, however unlikely the idea that James Harden might actually, quote unquote, buy in and have a change of heart, I'm not expecting a change of heart. But hey, if the Rockets are performing well, if they get to the midseason mark and they look like a top four seed in the West, maybe it's not necessarily a change of heart, but maybe it's enough for James Harden to say, you know what? Okay. They're not trading me. It's past the trade deadline. I'm going to give it my all for this other, you know, this half season that I'm still here, because this actually looks like this team might be able to make some noise in the playoffs. That's all we are asking for out of him, I think. And I think that's a reasonable ask. And so far, granted, he was a little bit tardy, it looks like he's willing to deliver on that.
If you can still get Simmons in the offseason, let's say Simmons in a pick, and James Harden is locked in the way that he looked yesterday, where you saw him mentoring the young kids, I think you have no choice but to hold on to him until the offseason. Like, it's solely because of that 2021 pick swap. Like, and that's the thing, you can't know. You don't know what's going to be there next offseason. But if some way I could guarantee you that that's there, you just have to take this last. God, I've completely.
It's a last ride into the sunset.
I'm shaking my head here because I've completely talked myself back in over the course of this. Because I was like, when we started recording, I was done.
This was going to be therapeutic. I got you. And two, you're the Rick and Morty meme. It's, you know, son of a bitch, I'm back in. Like, that's what you are right now.
I'm back in.
I love it. I love that this is how we have through 40 some odd minutes of therapeutic podcasting, we've gotten you back in. Hopefully some of the listeners are strapped in, you know, locked and loaded, ready to go for this season, because I am, because frankly, that's where we're at right now is, yeah, there's a lot of uncertainty, but guess what? He's still in a Rockets jersey. He's still going to go out and put up James Harden numbers. He's still going to go out there with a little bit of a beer belly and drop 40 on, opposing teams on a nightly basis. And it's going to still be enjoyable to watch because he's still James Harden. He's still a top three player. He's still going to go out there and put on a show on a nightly basis.
You know, he and Wall looked so bad together in the game yesterday. And that was completely to be expected because I think they had just one practice together. And, you know, Harden, he's played with other ball handlers before, but this is literally the first time in Wall's maybe life that he wasn't the primary ball handler. I mean, dating back to high school. But as they continue to gain familiarity and improve, and maybe they don't. I mean, maybe this is a Ty Lawson situation. But as they continue to gel, I mean, that's only going to get better. And don't forget, we haven't even seen Christian Wood yet, he was supposed to be the second best player on this team. So, you know, there's a lot of room for growth there. And as I had been saying, you know, I feel like I got ridiculed a lot for this by not just Rockets fans, but, you know, non-Rockets generalist accounts that follow me here and there. And, you know, it seemed like I was being too big of a homer by inquiring and asking, you know, why can't they be the two seed? I wasn't predicting that they'd be the two seed, but I didn't see why on paper they couldn't be the two seed. And I still don't. Like, I don't see how you look at this roster and say definitively that they can't be the two seed if Harden is actually here. Like, they haven't given me any reason to think that. Like, I think the defense could have questions. You know, there's questions on the defensive side of the ball, but like, I don't see any reason to write this team off if Harden is here.
None whatsoever. I've made the claim that on paper, and again, you know, the biggest questions coming in were going to be health for Wall, Cousins, Nwaba, you know, all of that. And then obviously the cloud that is the James Harden situation lingering over the team. But I've said multiple times that on paper, I think this team is a more versatile, dynamic team than the last 2 years of Rockets team. So the first year with Russ and the second year with Chris Paul, like legitimately. you look at the talent on this team, and specifically that's mainly because of the additions of Christian Wood and DeMarcus Cousins, because when you have versatile bigs who can play the outside game, who can, you know, pick and pop, who can also, you know, Christian Wood's going to give you that rim rolling verticality that, you know, you miss from having Clint Capella because of, you know, dealing him for Robert Covington, all that good stuff. You roll all of that into two players who are going to share the majority of the minutes at the five spot, as well as shoring up, you know, maybe they don't shore you up defensively per se, but you're also not going to get slaughtered on the rebounds on a nightly basis now because you have legitimate bigs in the game. So no, I don't think you can look at the Clippers or the Nuggets or the Jazz or the Blazers or whoever else, you know, the Suns, who have serious depth issues. You can't look at any of those teams and say that they are clear cut head and shoulders above the Rockets. You just can't, at least not on paper. And yeah. So far through three preseason games, John Wall looks healthy, DeMarcus Cousins look healthy, and David Nwaba looked healthy. And that was my biggest takeaway from those three games, is they look good. Also, I'm so sorry, shout out Chris Clemens. Just prayers up for Chris Clemens, man. Like, that was a horrendous thing that happened. And, you know, I felt for him so bad. You know, obviously he wasn't having the best of preseasons and was probably on the way to being cut. But still, to have to go endure that and fight back from an Achilles tear is going to be just awful. So I wish the best for him moving forward. But for the other guys who have rehabbed those Achilles tears, they look good. And that was the biggest concern going into the season.
It's been best case scenario. You know, aside from Harden and Wall yesterday, like, I would have never predicted that all three of the major guys coming back from injury would look as good as they have. Like, Wall, I mean, pretty much looks like vintage Wall. Nwaba looks elite defensively. I mean, his man defense might be a little bit slow, but like, he's been flying around everywhere, like as if he's actually Robert Covington. And DeMarcus looks good for the role that they're going to have him in. I mean, he should murder bench units. So we'll see what Christian Wood looks like. But to your point earlier, like, yeah, the Rockets could finish sixth or seventh, but on paper, there's no reason to laugh at the, you know, the notion that they could be second. Like, I don't see any other team on paper that's better than them other than the Lakers, definitively. They seem to have really every ingredient that you need on the roster, except for a backup point guard. And I mean, even there, if you have two elite playmakers like Harden and Wall, and then Eric Gordon can pick up the slack here and there, you're going to have weaknesses on your roster. But the absolute depth on the wings as well is something that they, you know, they haven't had in the last few years. It's just very, very impressive up and down. And don't forget, they also have extra picks. And so that's going to be really interesting how Rafael plays that, just depending on the James Harden situation, because, you know, you don't want to waste those if you have to pivot and trade Harden. But, you know, at the same time, maybe you're able to target somebody who fits a Ben Simmons timeline, and also he would help you now. And so, you know, if you can make an Eric Gordon trade and use those picks to get an upgrade somewhere, it's going to be tricky given, you know, the luxury tax and apron situation. But there's a lot of reason to be optimistic if you think that you can hold on to Harden for just this year. Like, you know, why not? Why not roll the dice and give it one last shot?
No, absolutely. And, you know, speaking to the situation regarding the luxury tax and the apron, there were some concerns because the Rockets are hard capped and we're looking to have to probably waive Chris Clemens to not be hard capped. You know, it sucks tucking this away at the tail end of the podcast, but that's just sometimes how these things roll. Chris Clemens, his contract becomes fully guaranteed because he is out for the remainder of the season. So that being said, the Rockets, you know, his $1.5 million contract will count against their payroll for tax purposes. So, but it does look like the Rockets, they've waived Jerian Grant, Trevelyan Queen, and Kenny Wooten. So it's looking like they're trying to edge towards not having to waive Gerald Green to be able to accommodate his salary on the roster, because it was probably between Gerald Green and Chris Clemens for that final spot to not fall under the hard cap for this season. But it looks like they're going to try and, you know, maneuver and pivot and do whatever they need to do to retain Gerald Green. So the mayor will hopefully be staying here in Houston, which, again, I think you cannot understate how important he is from a locker room perspective. He is just such a joy. Every time I've been able to ask him a question during media availability, he just, you know, similar to Steven Silas, he's just a guy who brightens up a room when he walks in. So hopefully that remains and Gerald Green gets to stay a Houston Rocket for this season. But Rahat, I think we've hit on quite a bit in today's pod. We went extra long in this third segment. We probably could have broken it up into two podcasts, honestly, but I'm glad we didn't. I feel like this was a really solid hoops convo, a very solid hoop convo, as per your tweet earlier, old man. But, you know, I've had a very therapeutic discussion on my end. I hope you're feeling better. And you out there listening, I hope you're feeling better about the Rockets headed into this next season. So let me give you a chance to plug anything you'd like to plug on the way out of here, Rod.
Nothing to plug, at Red 94. I mean, if you're listening to this, I'm sure you know, we interact a lot. So, all I got to say is I'm back in, unfortunately.
You know what? I'm not going to apologize for dragging you back in, because that's where I'm at. And that's where you should be at if you're listening to this podcast. But Rahat, thank you so much for stopping by. We really appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now for this episode of Locked On Rockets, that's going to do it. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.